Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. It is the 31st of January, the last day of the first month of the year. Hard to believe, but here we are.
What does that mean, the last day?
The last day of the first month of the year.
No, I know, but existentially, what does it mean? Philosophically,
well,
what does it mean?
That we're plummeting towards fascism.
We're plummeting towards death. Think it's one day more, right?
I'm thinking in the sequence of things, though, it would be first what you mentioned, Rosemary, right? And then we would go first fascism, then death, right?
Perhaps.
Good morning. Welcome. A cheery Tuesday morning to you all. We all have smiles on our faces and we're ready to go. Let me introduce the panel. I will tell you a little bit of business so I explain what we're doing today. It's a special day because it's photo day. Remember when you were a kid and you had
Absolutely.
Had school pictures?
They didn't have cameras back then.
Barbara.
Well, I'll say this. We didn't have photos. There was no such thing as a school photo.
Did they take your painting? What did they do?
No. I mean, it just wasn't a thing. And
okay.
In Cleveland, Ohio in the 1950s. I don't know what other people were doing.
Well, did you have this mic when you grew up to the school picture day?
Yes, we had it.
Yeah.
We just put our little ties on and smiled. And
so we have a wonderful photographer who volunteered to take pictures of the panel. And he's here today. And so we have an expanded panel. And we have other members of the panel who are coming in and getting their picture taken. And we'll use these for purposes down the line. But it's very nice to have our picture taken.
Yeah. I was having a wonderful conversation outside with him because he got me to laugh.
That's good.
The only good pictures of me.
Or when you're laughing?
Or when I'm smiling.
I've never had a good picture, and the talk of school photos doesn't help. My mother tortured me with an eighth grade photo where I have pigtails and the fattest period of my life.
I remember we had a photographer who would always make us say, like, pickles or hamburger buns. And today when I was getting my picture today, I had to say lockbox. So it sort of goes with it.
Cute how you got that.
Yeah. Eric. And your name?
It's Eric Corman.
Eric Corman. And where was home base for you?
Pittsfield.
Pittsfield. Excellent. A Pittsfield, Massachusetts native.
Well, not only that, he went to some of the best schools in New York City, I can tell you that much.
Well, so you were chatting up. That's good. Excellent.
No, yeah, well, when you say it's New York City, you say, where did you live? He says, the East Side. I said, I always say, my mother told me never to go on the East Side.
All right. So we have an expanded panel today. So if you hear some clicking, that's the pictures, and we'll share with those with you in due time. But for now, you'll know what that's about and why we have some extra folks with us, and we're thrilled to have them. I should also note that if you hear things clunking, it's a very small room with a lot of people in it. So that's another thing.
And if you smell something, it's patchouli.
and that would be rosemary. But that's another story.
Yeah, I'm going for the aging hippie look today.
It was very good. It's going to show up great on there.
Yeah, we'll see.
Barbara Smith is with us. She is an author, Barbara. An activist, and a delight when she joins us. So normally she joins us on Friday. This week she's joining us on Tuesday, and we're thrilled to have her here.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Thank you very much
for being with us. Mike Spain is here. Mike is the associate editor of the Times Union, and he joins us this morning, as he does each and every Tuesday. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Very nice to have you here. The director of the journalism program at UAlbany, Rosemary Armeo, is here. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And Alan Chartok is here. And good morning, Alan.
Well, Joe, bring us up to date. How much is in the lockbox right now?
I have a total. It's $511,377. Now, you will remember we have upped the lockbox total goal to $633,000.
And the reason for that, everybody, and I think everybody's indicating that they get it. We're getting a lot of letters on this. Is that we know from the Breitbart people and from President Bannon. Oh, I mean, Advisor Bannon.
Honest mistake.
Yeah, right. There's going to be an attempt. At least it's an announced attempt from the Breitbart people and also in published reports. To take down the humanities group, to take down the what else, Joe?
It's the humanities, arts, and public radio.
So we would have to be stupid not to assume that this guy means what he says. Why is he going to keep public radio and television alive? My bet is that they are going to take it down. So it's prudent. We have a First Amendment fund to raise the $400,000 that we get from the federal government and to put that out of a $7 million budget. How many times have I said that? About 1,000 times, right? And I got a letter yesterday saying, why don't you explain how much? Okay, so $400,000 and a third of that becomes what? Like $133,000, something like that. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So if you take that money that we are could lose from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, then yes, and you chunk it into thirds as we do our budget with the fund drive, then yes, it would be $133,000.
Now, if they take that money away, it's going to hurt a lot of public radio stations. It probably put several out of business. But I have to say, from where I'm sitting, I've never, and we all know this, I've never thought that we should be really big burdened, because it's a burden, from taking money from the federal government, because then they always say, okay, but then you have to do this, this, and this, and we don't like that. And so there is an advantage, by the way, in doing it for ourselves, really.
Absolutely. So here we are, and we need to get $633,000 by next Monday, which is the start of the fund drive, February 6th. And as Alan indicated, that will at the end. So we're now, the goal will now be $1,133,000, and at the end, that money will be taken aside and put into the First Amendment fund, correct?
Yes.
Excellent. Don't forget, we have a First Amendment t-shirt that's absolutely beautiful. It has all the words of the First Amendment on it. We're honoring the First Amendment, and we would love for you to have that. That's a $100 pledge. We also have the mug. That's a $100 pledge, but if you want both, $150. Do it. And we need your help. WAMC.org. We had an amazing day yesterday. You were all so generous. And
over $30,000.
And we have to keep going. So let's do it. So whatever you can do, get us to that point. We must be there by the start of the fund drive on February 6th. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. All right, that's the good news. The bad news we'll talk about after this short break. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And let us start with the news of the day. President Trump fired his acting attorney general on Monday night, removing her as the nation's top law enforcement officer after she defiantly refused to defend his executive order closing the nation's borders to refugees and people from predominantly Muslim countries. This is becoming ever more an escalating crisis for an administration that is, yes, just 10 days old. So the president declared in a statement that Sally Yates, who had served as deputy attorney general under President Barack Obama, had betrayed the administration by announcing that Justice Department lawyers would not defend Mr. Trump's order against legal challenges. All right. Who wants to begin? Rosemary.
All right. I'll start it off. It was very reminiscent of the bloody Saturday back in the Nixon administration, much older than 10 days old. And
5 years into his administration.
Yeah, 5 years into it. And he,
in 1973.
A series of attorney generals who refused to take illegal action.
Right. Nixon wanted them to fire the special Watergate prosecutor, Archibald Cox. And then Elliot Richardson, I think, refused to do it.
No.
So he canned him. And then William Ruckelshaus, who stepped in for Richardson, also refused. And they finally got
Jaworski.
Robert Bork to do it.
Yes.
Oh, Bork.
But a peach.
The solicitor.
Wasn't it Jaworski?
No, he was the actual prosecutor. He was in the impeachment trial. He was there.
No, I believe Jaworski was the
successor to Archibald Cox.
Three afterwards. Yeah.
He didn't fire. Yeah. At any rate, there are those who would say, well, you know, this is a Trump administration. It's brand new. They've got some problems with implementation. They made some mistakes. This was a hasty act, giving one excuse after another.
No, it's Delta's fault.
Delta's fault. All kinds of lies are coming out. Delta. And there is really an impulse that you do want to believe it. It's just bungling at the beginning. But there's a building body of evidence that something different is going on. And we need to listen to what Trump said during his campaign. He said, only I can help you. And he is now winnowing out, streamlining, I think is the word he's using, so that his close circle of friends and he are the ones making decisions. And this is part of that. Oh, you don't like what we're doing? Oh, well, okay, we'll get rid of you and hire somebody else.
So,
and it's Bannon and Conway, and it's this very, and Jared Kushner, this close
Cabal.
Evil. Yes. Thank you. That's what it is. Yeah.
Can I just focus on Yates for a moment? Because
run for office. Well, she's going to be a senator soon.
Many have said that she should have, Alberto Gonzalez was on today, said that she should have resigned as opposed to refused the act. The other thing is that we assume that Jeff Sessions will be in the position by the end of the
day.
By the end of the day. Well, the week, I believe, by the end of the week. And also bringing into question then why wasn't this whole thing held until he actually had an attorney general in his
Or why wasn't it run by the person he did have, the acting director, and said, hey, we're going to put this in office. You see any problems?
And let
them
know.
Got any wording changes you need here?
Okay, so I want to
take... He did that on purpose.
I want to take a different tack here, I think. I think that, look, she was an Obama appointee. I think she's a really gutsy lady. I think she saw an opportunity to tell it like it was. Sure, we could come up with 1,000 other scenarios, but she did what was gutsy, and her name is being bandied about for senator. We had a one letter here.
Sally Q. Yates is the name.
Yeah, Sally. And we have somebody who is saying she should run for president now. You know, look.
It's a little premature, wouldn't you say?
A tad.
But you know what?
It's just so unusual to see courage in a political leader and spine that, you know, we just are jumping for it.
Yeah, but you know what? It's going to have her in the history books. It may be a little piece in the history books, but when the history of this whole thing is written, she's going to be there.
I'm disappointed in the guy from Virginia who replaced her and says he'll enforce the...
Why would you be disappointed?
Bork. Yeah, he's the Robert Bork in this situation.
I mean, why would you just be disappointed given his politics?
Well, no. You know, Barbara, again, the story on this guy was that he worked for both Republicans and Democrats.
Bush appointee.
And they both gave him tremendously high marks as a quote utility infielder when they wanted to find somebody to do something they would do it.
Yeah, his politics don't indicate he's not a
I just want to take a counterpoint of view here. I think Trump loves this opportunity to fire a defiant public officer that goes against his will and a woman, and he knocks her down. This is going to just build his strength with his political base, which is happy with everything he's doing. He's fulfilling his campaign promises. It's all appearances, but from a public relations point of view, it fits perfectly with what he wants. It's disruptive and it's upsetting and it's really angering those who oppose him.
Hey, Mike, you may be right, but it's also that Trump had no choice. He had a fire. He did. And
I think there are some other things he could have done. Like, in the original order is the thing to go after green card holders. That's completely illegal. And, of course, they pulled back right away. So it runs, by putting it in, it runs sort of like a loyalty test. He's just going to see who supported him and who didn't.
But Rosemary, even her language, which was, I'm not sure this is constitutional. She didn't say this is unconstitutional. She said, I'm not sure this is constitutional. I don't
think he cares a whit about her or about any Obama appointee or anybody in the State Department or the Justice Department. He's going to replace them all. I think he was kind of testing the water to see how far he could go. He also drew out all those hundreds of protesters. So now we've had protests, the Women's March, followed by airport marches. Pretty soon we're going to get sick of marches. So that cuts out one more tool that the protesters have.
I would beg to disagree with that. I don't think that those of us who are committed to justice in this country and have been for a number of years with many, many more people coming into the fold as we speak, I don't think we're going to get tired of it.
All really very noble, but that's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people whose minds we have to change, senators and congressmen and people who supported Trump but weren't strong about him. Those are the ones who will get sick of it.
Well, Rosemary, I don't agree with you either.
Okay.
And no, I don't, because I think what's going to happen, I think Barbara's right, is that people, you saw this thing the other night, and then all of a sudden it wasn't anybody was planning to have a march on Washington or a march in New York City. All of these people just showed up.
The spontaneity of it does make me think that this
angry.
Is not played out yet.
Right. Yeah. And I think we're going to see some movement in another direction. My wonderful wife, Roselle, who is, doesn't speak for me, I don't speak for her, but she's planning on Valentine's Day at noon, 5 minutes of silence, as in, and it's going out all over the place, as in the day the world stood still. Remember when, what's his name, came in and came down to Earth and everything?
What was the name of that
fellow?
What was
the guy? Atu or something like that. Yeah. what do you think?
Klaatu?
That was the robot.
That was the robot. So there are going to be a lot of ingenious things that begin to happen now. But I think what you're going to see is strikes. I think you're going to start to see strikes in which the country just sort of stops.
Let's take a break. We will go to news, and we'll continue our conversation when we come back. We will get started we welcome your letters to panel@wamc.org. We've got a lot to talk about. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Romeo, Mike Spain, Barbara Smith, and our photographer. We welcome your comments. panel@wamc.org. I'll give you a few moments. You can also help out the lockbox, too. We desperately need you at WAMC.
Let's go.
.org. 1-800-323-9262. But if you can do it online, you can make the front office so much happier. WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is very nice to have you all with us. We have a lot of letters. I just want to remind you, it is a friendly reminder that we ask you to send your letters to the panel to panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel@wamc.org. Please do not use any other address because we will, A, not see them, and B, we will not be able to read them. So if you want your voice and your words seen and or heard, please send them to panel@wamc.org. We do have letters. People send it to the right address, and we have those.
We do, and I just want to say one other thing, and that is wherever I go, people are talking about this program. Rosemary, are you hearing that also?
Except from my students.
Yeah, well, sure.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I had that conversation last night. It was with the kids. Like, does anybody know what public radio is? Does anybody know the difference between public radio and commercial radio? Nobody.
I showed an episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. My course is Images of Journalism and Film. So I said, yeah. I just want to go. Not a laugh in the room. Not one bit of correlation. They thought it was disgusting and possibly criminal that Lou Grant came into our apartment late at night, kind of drunk and staggering, and wrote a love letter to his wife. It's a very funny episode. Didn't get it at all.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I know.
Talk about a time warp.
I know. I felt completely inadequate to making them understand.
Why don't you show them the Chuckles the Clown funeral episode?
And who is Pete Seeger, by the way?
Right.
Happened in David Christina's class when I was talking to them. And who is Pete Seeger? Oh, only one hand goes up. Was that Bob Seger's brother?
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like I was teaching archaeology. It was really something.
Okay, you want me to read or not?
No.
Yes, please.
Okay.
John, who writes frequently, critically, I may say, there is no parallel to the Nixon era. First of all, Nixon's AG was appointed by Nixon, not a political hack who saw herself as a liberal heroine. Secondly, as far as legality, she had reviewed this prior, and even liberal constitutional experts such as Alan Dershowitz commented that the acting AG had this wrong. She will only be in the history book as a failed attempt to stall the process as an opposing political hack. While I don't agree with that, I read it. Remember, I read it. Well, and I wanted to comment during the letter.
Credit for reading it.
Yeah, I wanted to.
Well, obviously somebody just loves the chaos and the cruelty that is spewing out of this White House. That's what I would say in response to that. Yeah, follow the rules to the camps.
And John says, Sally Yates for president. I'm serious. You see? There you are. And then...
It's like when you correct so many bad papers that when you get one that's got the spelling and punctuation right, you're ready to call the Pulitzer Prize Committee.
Right.
And that's the way it is with
Faulkner?
Politicians. Like, oh, wow, she stood up for what she believed in and it cost her. She sacrificed for it, president.
You think that's misplaced?
I think it's pathetic that what should be routine is so unusual.
Yeah, well, but it is unusual, and that's why we love it.
Well, this is what you were talking about, this, you know, actually somebody with a spine.
Right.
that we'll take whatever we can get at this point,
Andy,
right?
Andy Berowitz has so much material these days, but his one for yesterday was scientists amazed that McConnell and Ryan can walk erect without spines.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a great article.
I was going to say the same thing.
Fabulous.
Jackie says, not to put a downer on your conversation, but we were wondering if the federal government could take away your license at the same time that they stopped funding the station. And if the station is dissolved, would the federal government be able to absorb the lockbox funds? Not over my dead body. Okay. We are loyal supporters. I realize that these are terrible questions. We've contributed to the lockbox, and we love your show. And that's Jackie and David in Suffield, Connecticut. Okay, so the answer is, there are still courts. If they try something like that, we would be in court. We would,
the First Amendment would be on your side.
I would think so, although if they're going to appoint 100 federal judges, which we're hearing, you never know. But you got to fight. You got to have courage. You got to stand up.
Which, and not to be too crass about this, but which is why so many years ago we developed this First Amendment Fund, to put money into
exactly.
a fund
that, exactly,
to help with threats like this. And so that's what we're trying to do now. But just... Again, I didn't want to make it into a sales
previous
job, but just
presidents
so you know.
Used the FCC to pressure unfavorable, broadcast media that they didn't like. Yeah.
As well as the IRS.
That's right.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
It is amateur hour, says Mike. Presidents Bannon and Miller, Trump, wrote the exec order without, capital letters, consulting with the people who are charged to enforce it. The legal counsel from Justice, State, and Defense might have informed Trump of the pitfalls, but that didn't happen. Clinton supporters were right. Trump has no temperament, and he is proving them right, and that's from Mike in Glens Falls.
There are so many stories that have come out of this, but the one that came out on Sunday, which sort of has gone away, was that Giuliani was taking credit for writing it and making it legal.
Yeah, he said that they came to him and asked how he could institute a Muslim ban that would be legal. He boasted about that. At the same time that Spicer and other people are saying, oh, the word Muslim doesn't appear anywhere in this. Where are you getting that idea
from?
That
is such sophistry.
Sure is.
Ridiculous.
I still think it's emboldening those who supported Trump. You listen to interviews with people who supported him, and they're saying, this is exactly what I want to hear. One guy on CNN who supported Trump in Pennsylvania said, I am proud, finally, for the first time in 8 years, to be an American. Boy, what does that say?
Well, yeah.
And then a woman said she was disappointed in Trump because they haven't locked Hillary up yet, and she wants to see that happen. I mean, some people are completely in favor of all this, and this is emboldening them. It's really angering the other side. It's the people in the middle, which way they go on this, and that's going to make the difference.
So, Mike, what it says is that one is ashamed to live in a country, if you're a white racist, that is led by a black president.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it says. This is fulfilling their most fervent fantasies of white supremacy, of hatred. It's a disaster. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I was going to say I was photographed at a protest this weekend carrying a sign that said, deport racists, keep the immigrants. And a cousin who was a Trumper, wrote and said, great, so now you're calling me a racist just because I believe in stronger national borders? And that's what the conversation has come to. So when all those people out there say, oh, just talk, we have to talk with each other and bring the country together, I really, really wonder whether it's possible. We're just talking right past each
other. Well, is it going to happen by everybody being in each other's throats? I mean, won't it ultimately come from something in the middle that is able to reach across and find some common ground? Or does it have to be one side destroys the other? Because if that's it, I'm afraid we're in for a bad, bad time.
I think it's a really interesting question because this idea of having dialogue with people who are Trump supporters, that's not a job I can do because I actually want to live longer. I'm talking physically live longer. There are neighborhoods and communities that if my car breaks down, I'm terrified, if you see what I'm saying, because there have been black people who have walked up on the porches of certain other Americans and they've ended up dead because they were assumed to be some kind of a criminal as opposed to a person, a lady, because this happened to a young woman in the Detroit area instead of being assumed to be someone who had car trouble and was just simply asking for help. She was shot in the face. So, as I said, that's not work that I can do. As far as the politics of it, I think it's really interesting because those who are so upset about what's going on are indeed skewing and do indeed skew progressive. So I think you're right in some ways, Mike. Something has to happen that even people who don't really give much thought about social justice issues are going to say, no, that's a bridge too far. I think the little five-year-old who was separated from his mother. Now, yes. I'm not sure which person was coming into the country. Was it the child or was it the mother? But I think that little five-year-old that we've been hearing about, that should soften a few hearts.
Yeah, like the little Turkish boy found dead on the beach. Remember that? That was supposed to soften hearts about refugees.
Yeah.
Not for long.
Right.
For about 20 minutes, we go, oh, that's kind of bad.
Exactly.
And then back to business
as normal.
You're
so right about that. Or the little boy sitting in the back of the ambulance.
Yes. Oh, my God. Awful.
I do want to mention that when we're talking about protesting, President Obama did come out yesterday
after he
made a couple of statements, but one saying that he was heartened by the level of engagement taking place in communities around the country, but also rejecting the idea that President Trump based his immigration executive order on a policy adopted by his own administration. Trump has said that his move to ban the entry of citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries and to suspend temporarily the admission of refugees was based in part on the decision in 2011 by then-President Obama to ban the admission of Iraqis to the country after evidence surfaced that two Iraqis seeking resettlement had been linked to a terrorist activity in their homeland. The Obama and Trump administrations also identified the same seven countries as harboring terrorism threats. Former Obama administration officials have denied that there was ever a halt to the awarding of visas to Iraqis, though the processing of those applications did slow after they were subject to more intense scrutiny. And
that was after a terrorist attack, a domestic attack in Kentucky or something. He put a hold on it or something.
But
it seemed like it tightened things up for a while.
So the statement yesterday said that President Obama fundamentally disagrees with the notion of discriminating against individuals because of their faith or religion.
And nobody of the Bush, Obama, or present administration have done anything about Saudi Arabia, which in fact it was Saudi Arabians who blew up the World Trade Center. So go figure that out.
Or, predominantly, yes.
What about the countries, the Muslim countries where Trump has business interests?
Yeah,
none
yeah.
of those are on the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so James, who sang I Feel Good, I Feel Good?
James Brown.
Yeah, okay, so that James wrote
yes.
to us.
James
Brown wrote to us.
Well,
James
that would
Brown
be a
is dead.
Bigger story than anything we've been talking about so far.
I agree.
The Godfather of Soul is
deceased.
Is with God.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. No, I knew that. I was making a little
joke. No, I
know.
I understand.
Okay.
But another James Brown.
No, I think he's channeling the real.
Okay, all right. I'll take that.
Alan has expressed concern that Trump could stage a coup in 4 years to extend his power. Is a good coup to remove Trump and his trumpets now more likely as we head down the path to dictatorship? The future is bleak.
I think they're working on it. What do you make of the story that he is filed already, right now?
Yeah.
He is a candidate for 2020.
Isn't that amazing?
Which affects the way some rules apply to him. For example, if you're a nonprofit, if you're 501c3, although I don't get this because you're really not supposed to lobby at all then, you have to treat him in a different way. He cannot be attacked in quite the same way. He can raise money. I think the idea of a coup is not crazy to talk about, and I hate conspiracy theories.
There were people who believed right up until January 20th that President Obama was going to, have the UN Army march into Texas not leave office and all other kinds of absurd things like that. And a lot of people actually believe that. I mean, there's going to be that kind of thing all along, but what probably is more likely is this, what's been going on the past 10 days is going to take some moderate Republicans and shift them away, and it's going to create a gridlock that makes the gridlock Obama experience seem like small potatoes. And that's not a good thing either, but it will probably contain Trump.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of pressure
on
people.
Do you hope that will happen?
If it contains Trump from doing radical taking radical steps, I'd say that probably would be a good thing. But gridlock isn't good. I think what you need is a consensus among the senators, you're not going to get it in the House of Representatives, but I think it's potential in the Senate to come up with a alternative plan that may not be what the Democrats in minority like, but they'll certainly like it better than the Trump program.
Alan?
Yeah. Well, I've said all along, I'm saying again, that the John Fassos and the other guys, Chris Gibsons and others who come from competitive districts, those are the guys who really will be seen as the people who can make a change.
By the way, Elise Stefanik.
Elise Stefanik, right?
Elise Stefanik.
You know, our North Country second-term U.S. Congress member.
Who has been mentioned for president, by
which,
the way.
Which, by the way, one of the first. Yeah. One of the first
opened
to come
right
out
away.
And said that this ban is...
unfair.
Yeah. So unfair. I thought that was interesting. We're going to take a break, Alan, and then we'll come back. We'll come back. We'll go more letters. We have a lot more to talk about. Speaking of gridlock, we want to talk about the gridlock to come, and that, of course, is the Supreme Court nominee who will be named tonight. So we have more on that. We'll talk about that and much more after this short break. The eight current Supreme Court justices were appointed when they were between 43 and 60 years old. They all attended Ivy League law schools. Half were nominated by a Democrat, half by a Republican. Tonight at 8 o'clock, President Trump will fill at least one. He will fill a look to nominate someone to fill the vacant seat left open to replace Justice Antonin Scalia. And there are three people who have been named as the front runners in this race. William Pryor is 54 years old, a judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit Court in Alabama. Neil Gorsuch, 49 years old, judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit in Colorado. And Thomas Hardiman, 51 years old, judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 3rd Circuit in Pennsylvania. We started right before the break talking about gridlock. Chuck Schumer has already said that he will look to block any nominee. So we're looking for a lot more gridlock, aren't we?
Well, the Supreme Court has had a vacancy for almost a year now, just a couple weeks from now.
And they've been doing pretty well with it.
And, you know, it hasn't been awful. So maybe that'll be not as damaging to the process as some might think.
This is the end. You know, when they get that extra vote, it's going to be a conservative Supreme Court. No two ways about it. And therefore, we're hoping, many of us, that Chuck Schumer will do his thing. Now, if in fact what they do is they do the nuclear option, which they did with the lower federal courts, and say it's just going to take a majority, and they can do that, by the way, just going to take a majority, and I'm sure Trump would love that, then he gets all the people he wants all the time he wants.
I think he's going to get all the people he wants anyway, no matter what the Democrats do, because they're in such – their numerical superiority has evaporated in every way. We have had a Supreme Court that was as unbalanced as it will be if a Trump appointee goes on. We lived through the Scalia Court. So it is actually the next vacancy that's the danger.
Yes, good thinking and good point.
Say that again.
Scalia, the court was 5-4 conservative with Scalia on, so that's what we would go back
to. If there's another vacancy that Trump gets to fill.
But that was
unacceptable. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, live long and prosper.
That's exactly, that's what I pray for.
Get rest.
Yeah.
Do your exercise.
Did you guys
have a nip?
Did you all happen to see? We were watching CNN last night. Sorry, Rosemary. We were watching CNN last night, and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer led a group of protesters in front of the Supreme Court. I don't know if you all saw that. They couldn't make the microphone work. Poor Nancy Pelosi. Is this working? Well, okay. That can happen to anybody. But I turned around to Roselle and I said, I can't believe that these people can't figure out how to make the microphone
work.
Well,
did you hear the tweet this morning? The president of the United States evidently was watching CNN and they can't make their mic work. And Schumer with fake tears, you know?
Yeah, he is. Just so that listeners.
So he was watching.
Just so listeners know what's being referred to on Sunday. Senator Schumer was with Muslim families talking about the Muslim ban, and he got choked up.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, the predator-in-chief talked about how I know Chuck Schumer, and I want to know who his acting coach is because I'm only 5% sure that those tears were genuine. Talk about a horrific creature.
I don't know whether that's useful. Again, it to some people, they just cackle with glee when they read a tweet like that.
Oh, so, sure, you know, yeah. We're talking.
It's met with a different feeling
right, but
than
the
you
thing,
do.
But the thing is, around this table, and I'm sure around the tables of people who are having breakfast with us, or et cetera, I'm sure that they find it appalling that somebody actually would choke up, and that's a response of the person running this nation.
It's just continuing the sort of sophomoric or, you know, even grammar school level sneery behavior that was going on during the campaign.
Well, the thing is, to me, I've experienced it differently. His level of hatred and bigotry and lack of compassion, I see it differently because I'm the target of it. Do you see what I'm saying? So I don't ever put bad behavior and impoliteness and sophomoric or grade school behavior. To me, that's on a continuum with racism and hate and bigotry.
I don't want to bust your bubble, but don't you think we're all the target of it?
Right in different now? Ways, but yeah. You know, since my people have led that, you know, have had a leading role in scapegoating in the United States of America, I feel it particularly deeply.
Okay. Can I just make one more reiteration of a rule? Don't be bothering us with more than one letter, because we get 1,000, and you're just adding to the pile, and we're not going to read it, so don't do it.
Also, links are not helpful on the radio.
Yeah,
people send us links for like,
we don't
like
accept that.
800-word articles. We can't open those and
we don't.
Open them up into everybody's mind on the radio.
Yeah. So. Can people write once a day, Alan?
Oh, there are people who write several times a day.
Well, are you allowed to write? Are you encouraging that people limit it to once a day or even less?
Oh, no, once a day. Once a day.
I just wanted to clear that up.
If that's enough already.
I actually have to admit I read some of the links. They're pretty interesting.
Well, no, that's all.
No. Is that okay? Am I in trouble?
I'm just saying that people expect you to read them on the air.
Oh,
and
no,
read
no.
And we can't do that. That's all I'm saying.
I want to lead you to a 6,000-word article in the Washington Post. Really? What do you want us to do with it?
Okay. Sometimes we already have enough homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alan.
Good morning. I just contributed to the Lockbox and urge other listeners to do so right now, today. I have a habit of cruising comment sections on Breitbart and other unsavory websites, as well as the nastiest of the comments on Progressive Post. One of the most absurd claims is this notion of paid protesters. You got a million people out there, 2.5 million people in the United States, and you're saying they're all paid?
Yeah.
Where was my check?
I actually got asked about that on Facebook, like how much should I make for going down to the Women's March? I go, heck, the wine bill alone just almost bankrupted.
So he goes on. She goes on to say, it is spouted again and again to dismiss any marches and protests. What a bunch of bloviated horse hooky. Pure applesauce. Hooky.
I love those words.
That's hooky is H-O-O-K-E-Y, right? Mm-hmm. Hooky?
Yeah.
Right.
But that person meant hockey, I guess.
Yeah. Pure applesauce.
I don't know. I love when you say applesauce, but go ahead.
Okay. Bloviated is a great word, too.
It is so hard to believe that people are informed, fed up, disgusted, and exercising their rights in a spontaneous, organic manner? Question mark. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the point the listener's making? I don't understand.
This comes back to the pay protesters.
Okay.
In other words, this is all part of the pay protesters letter. And she says, is it so hard to believe that people are informed, fed up, disgusted, and exercising their rights in a spontaneous, organic manner?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. That's because we started to have a conversation in the middle of the letter. And that's where the confusion came from. Dear panel, says Bernard, you keep referring to Trump's base. Who or what is his base? And what is their reaction to Trump's latest executive order? And that's Bernie from Woodburn.
Well, I mean, when I talk about his base, I'm talking about maybe in the low 20s or mid 20s who are firm supporters of Trump and they voted for him enthusiastically.
20%, we should note.
Is it 20 or?
Oh, you said mid 20s. You're sort of talking a percentage point, not an age.
I'm sorry.
Or not a number.
Yes,
not
percentage
a number.
Point.
20 people
of the
in America.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Very
no,
good
that's
clarification.
Good.
Not that age group. And very much not that age group. But these are people who support him strongly. And then there were other people who voted for him, evidently, because he won, who probably had mixed feelings about it but didn't like the Democrats. And then there's all the people that sat out, which were quite a few.
And here's a letter. Yeah. Whining, cynical naysayers, get with it. The trend is democracy, as it should be, with coal factories galore coming back soon. Come on, no. get behind our president, Trumpolini.
Trumpolini.
I think that was tongue-in-cheek.
That was satire. Yeah, yes. I think so.
I think so.
All right, one more letter, and then we're going to go over to the news.
Matt says, if Trump gave an order to seize the assets of a major news outlet like the New York Times or ABC News under the guise of national security, what recourse or protection do we have to prevent it? Can protective steps be taken by the governor now to protect the press? And that's from Matt in Robbinsville, New Jersey.
Seizing press is what they do in Uganda. Here he is marginalizing the press. He doesn't have to seize the New York Times. He has just made it the enemy. Like, its credibility is down.
The failing New York Times.
Yeah, the failing New York Times.
So nobody sees the possibility.
Don't see it happening, no.
Nobody sees the possibility of a fascist takeover in this country.
Oh, yeah, I do see a fascist takeover. Well, I just don't think you have to take over the newspapers physically like they do in Uganda.
You undermine
in order
its
to
credibility.
That.
Yeah. I mean, use fake news. You give an alternate set of facts. You make people confused, or you give people things they like to read instead of things that are true.
All right, we have to go to a break, but we'll continue this rant of thought.
He was in the middle of a rant.
Were you about
to make
a statement?
Oh. Oh, okay. He said now.
Yeah, you said now.
That's what goes on now.
No, meaning now.
I see what you're saying.
You guys are also namby-pamby. You know, you sort of say, okay, we're going to make fun of the New York Times. But if you say at the end of 4 years that this election, like the one I just won, is going to be rigged, and therefore we can't have an election, then you've got fascism, true fascism.
We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And everybody okay? All right. We're having a good time. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Barbara Smith. I'm Joe Donahue. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can write to us. Panel at WAMC.org. And while you're at WAMC.org, which I realize is another place, but while you're at your computer, hey, why don't you help out with the lockbox? Because we have a goal of $633,000. And why do we have that goal, Alan?
We have it, and I'm really appreciative that you've mentioned it. We have it because we want to stay alive. It's that simple. We want to stay alive, and you want us to be alive because you're listening to this show and you love it and it's important to you. And so go to WAMC.org and say, here's my money, colleagues, or comrades or friends, here's my money, you know.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
Yeah, I know. I will say that just since we've started, it's been about $5,000 or $6,000 just in the half hour since we talked about it the first time. So we gave the last total, so that's very nice. But we still need a lot of money.
We need $120,000.
That's right. Absolutely.
And ladies and gentlemen, we really need that money because we're going to show by getting that money that we will not die, that we're going to be going, that's what the First Amendment Fund is for. That's what you're for. That's what we're for. We'll all do our part, and we'll do it. But we do need $100,000, and that's a lot of money in the next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
5 days, 6 days, yeah.
Five days.
So, you know, Alan, I think that's a really good point. I was going to ask you about this because there's the practicality. You need the money. You want to put money both obviously to operate the station, and then you want to put money aside to protect the station from whatever future whatever the future holds. But also, by doing this and by doing it quickly and by everybody coming together, that sends a hell of a signal, too.
Oh, it really does. I mean, it's the same thing as a march. It's the same thing as going to Washington or New York or Albany and getting out or to an airport. We will not be sent off.
The words that Alan keeps on using are now more than ever, and really has become the mantra of all this. And so it's important to keep in mind, do what you can do, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. Don't forget, we have the First Amendment mug, we have the First Amendment T-shirt. You can get both for $150. You can get one of them if you want to pick one And by the way, if you're going to pick one, the T-shirt is beautiful. Really is. It has the First Amendment on it, all the words. And you can always remember it.
What
and
color
down.
Is that?
What did we say? Taupe? What did we say?
You said taupe, and then Colleen corrected you and said it. Another
gray, dark gray.
No, it's not gray. Not gray.
But it's not gray. Yeah.
No, the, ivory. It's
ivory. Floating.
It's kind of a cream color.
Yeah, cream, ivory.
As the kids would say.
How many words are in the First Amendment, Rosemary?
45.
45 words.
There you go.
It's sort
all
of
right.
Like, it's sort of like. Whatever.
Sort of like whatever. WAMC.org. All right, now back to business. The White House, this was a big deal last night, and then we heard reports that they were reversing it, and then they were going back. But the White House vowed Tuesday to keep the Obama administration protections extended to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender workers, apparently responding to reports that the orders would be reversed. President Trump continues to be respectful and supportive of LGBTQ rights, just as he was throughout the election. Okay, just want that to sit in the air for a moment. The White House said in the statement, the president is proud to have been the first ever GOP nominee to mention the LGBTQ community, which, by the way, came off trippingly off of his tongue when he said it, in his nomination acceptance speech, pledging then to protect the community from violence and oppression. The stance followed reports that the Trump administration was considering a sharp break with Obama-era protections.
So what my response, and I almost interrupted you, is, and I have a bridge I want to sell you, because it's completely bogus. I was thinking about that incredible right-wing nut, the guy who's a billionaire, who's gay, who supports him.
Thiel.
Yeah.
The owner of PayPal, Peter Thiel.
Yes, who Peter thinks Thiel. That the reason the United States is in such a trouble is because women got the vote. That's his perspective. So I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, that guy, Thiel, and the people in the Trump administration, maybe they had a little conversation, and he said, "No, don't do this now." Yeah, you know, there's no faith and no trust that these people will in any way support the rights of the LGBTQ community.
I mean, you
community.
Can only assume that if the reports are correct, that there was a draft executive order that was being circulated, that it was on the agenda, correct?
Right.
Well, somebody's agenda. I mean, I think that people are throwing things at him. They're throwing executive orders at him. He's signing them without reading them. But and this could have been a possibility.
As Bill Maher says, nicely put into those beefsteak Charlie sort of containers, menu holders that he when he shows them off to the cameras.
But the real question is, although nothing formal will happen to rescind the Obama administration position, how would Attorney General Jeff Sessions be? Would he aggressively enforce the protections that the Obama administration had put in place, or will he just be laissez-faire and not go after these abuses when they're
Let's
reported?
Let's take a guess what Jeffrey Beauregard would do.
Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions. Mm-hmm. Now, we're being a little bit harsh on him.
With Mike Pence standing right behind him, looking over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll work.
All right.
I mean,
he won't need to rescind it, is my point.
Jeff Sessions
de facto, it won't really be enforced.
The most poignant letter I got, well, I've been here, is from a young gay man who said, "I'm afraid I won't be alive in 4 years." And that really got me. It got me right in the gut.
And I wonder, do you know what he was thinking of? Because there are several possibilities. One is a hate crime, the other is lack of access to health care, if you know what was it, but yes,
didn't
on any,
say, but
on any number
said.
Of levels, yes. On
we,
any,
we haven't
well,
talked.
Six Muslims are dead in Quebec.
I was
you
just going to bring up Quebec. There
yes.
you go. We haven't talked about that here.
Right.
And who is the main suspect? Not a refugee.
Not at all.
No.
Not another Muslim. A white supremacist who has in
was,
the past tweeted support of Trump.
Well, as I say. Extreme vet Dylan Roof. That's my idea.
Yes.
But they're not, they never think that way. They don't think that way.
We have a lot more letters. We'll get to those. And Alan?
Oh, okay. Andrew says, "It seems that the court of public opinion on both the right and left can agree on one thing. The executive order regarding immigration is related to Trump's stated intention of banning Muslims from entering the USA. My concern regards how this will flesh out in the court of law. Have Trump and his administration suit-proofed the order by never explicitly mentioning Muslims in the order, or will the common sense prevail and attach his previous words to his current actions despite legal burdens of proof? Keep up the good chatter.
Well,
Andrew.
Common sense seems at a premium here, but because you during this order, now they're saying that it had nothing to do with religion, but as he was signing it, said it was going to prioritize Christians. So
you're telling me he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth?
I don't even know, Mike. I don't know. I'm not sure they even read it. I don't know.
It didn't say Christians. It said minorities, religious minorities in their own
country.
But
he told CBN, Christian Broadcast Network, referring to Christians. Yes.
But artfully, when they say the words Christian and Muslim don't appear in the act, that is technically correct.
No, that
only
is true.
Only technically. I get you.
I know, but
it is in there.
Yeah. I'm reacting to the tweet of saying that the failing New York Times and other media outlets are unfairly saying that this is a religious ban and religion has nothing to do with it. Meanwhile, as he was signing in, he said that this was to...
I want to read two in a row.
Yes. Oh, good.
Okay. Elizabeth,
a twofer.
I remember Newt Gingrich in the 90s saying that the country would only be able to come together when one side completely crushed the other. I don't remember that, but I'm sure it's true. So the statement shocked my young idealistic self, but it's turned out to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. The second letter, which I'll read now. Trump is the voice of half the nation. We of the other half must be clear about that and stop dreaming about coming together. Consensus isn't possible. It never really was. That's why politics exists, also revolutions, and that's Eric in Grand Isle.
Yeah, we keep talking about we have to talk and listen to each other, and I swear the more I listen, the more upset I get. I am not feeling any consensus.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty extreme in my views. But I can't name anyone who said, well, thank goodness, you know, I had a good talk and we cleared up some things and we agreed on a lot. Not hearing that.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is I think people are going to see what's happening and they're going to evolve into a – they're going to understand what standing up for people's rights really mean, and they're going to – a majority of people are going to find themselves that they actually do agree.
Barbara?
Yeah, I was just going to say that there are also groups who have not been targeted yet. One of the things I read in that article about how social media helped to really organize the major actions of the last two weekends is that when you lose your health care, there's going to be another group of people out on the street, possibly, in en masse. Speaking truth to power. So we'll see how this unfolds. But it's like a hit a minute, it seems, out of the White House. What a relationship for a president to have the people of the country.
Yeah, what happened to being a centrist, to being a compromiser, to going slow, to letting things develop? Why is it we have to have change in right now, and I waited for Obama to change and he didn't,
The pace of change has changed in our 21st century. I mean, that's a reality, you know. The cycles are much shorter, and this is one of the things we're experiencing. We're watching
technology.
Swings. Technology and just the pace of interaction. And it is fueled by technology, sure.
So Anne from Woodstock writes, Faso is cautiously against the immigration ban since yesterday. Up until then, he had made no statement for or against. Well, let me say, I thought he was pretty strong on this when he came out yesterday. I'm sorry, fact is fact. And would you rather have a guy who says nothing, or would you rather have a guy who's fairly strong coming out and doing it?
It's significant that he's a Republican and he's a freshman congressman, and he's expressing that opinion. And it'll give others some encouragement to speak out also. And I think you'll find that, you know, there's not a lot of consensus in the Congress with Trump's extreme positions. There is some, but not a lot.
Well, Mike, when a congressman does something like that, and he's very smart. I know him very well. He's a very smart guy. He's very articulate. He's smart. He is in a divided district where you can win or lose. And he's smart. He knows
You've mentioned that.
It's pragmatic. Yeah.
Well, no, but it's true. One can hardly go inside his brain and figure out why he's doing what his motives are. are, but at least he's doing it. Now, if you were a person who is really against this immigration thing, wouldn't you think you'd want to reward him for coming out and saying that?
Yes, I think he'll win. Moderates who were on the fence about him in the last election will be persuaded to support him in the next election.
Well, you know, Chris Gibson did it very well. He was a Republican,
sure,
too.
Sure.
And people liked him.
Yep.
Good morning. The panel has become my anchor each morning in a crazy world. Reverend William Barber of North Carolina has found ways to get discussions going on Moral Mondays by sticking to discussion of one issue, needing solutions rather than discussing sides. We urge such thinking to move us forward, said Linda. Could we discuss, says Martha, could we discuss the chaos and shock frenzy around the immigration ban and the attendant collective hand-wringing and analysis of it, however rightly deserved, all be a part of larger strategy that foresaw and even designed them? Meanwhile, what is happening in the background? Steve Bannon is appointed to the role where he can shape foreign policy. A much more dangerous situation than the ban, which was designed to be something that could be walked back, or at least to some extent. Forget what the Russians have on Trump. What does Bannon have on Trump? That's from Martha. Well, the ban thing is connection is very.
I'm interested in the Starbucks thing going on. Have you heard about this?
No.
Of hiring the Syrian,
yes,
refugees?
Yeah, they've announced that they're going to hire a slew of refugees.
Was it 10,000 was the number?
10,000. I didn't hear Syrian. And so there's a call. The Wall Street Journal had a story. There's a call for a boycott against them because, you know, it's supposed to be America first. And every Americans need jobs, so why are we doing this?
Excuse me? I'm now thinking it's my patriotic
duty to get a latte.
Anybody who is a refugee to this country and is able to get in, because, of course, as of this past weekend, that's not even allowed. But anyone who's a refugee to this country came here because of the horrors that they were experiencing where they migrated from. To say that these people are not deserving of jobs and that they're not Americans. I mean, that is the very height of racism and xenophobia as far as I'm concerned.
They actually have a plan of over 5 years of hiring these. And you're right, it is refugees. And with there are some guidelines of where their work has been and so forth to helping to as Barbara indicated, in our new changing face, the legalities of making that possible.
But there is a group that is organizing a boycott against them because they don't want this to happen. So all you coffee drinkers, I think we have to get lattes.
It's so ironic, though, when you think about the actual origins of this nation. This is a nation of immigrants. This is always said. I'm not one of the people that applies to, since my people were dragged here in chains. But everybody else, pretty much. And that meant that you came into a nation that was our of country, because it wasn't a nation at that time. You came into a place that was already inhabited by indigenous people who had been here for multiple millennia, and you started working. I mean, there were no real jobs because there was no industry or anything like that. But as the nation evolved, people came in waves, and they were allowed to, with of course, pushbacks and anti-Asian exclusion acts, etc. But the thing is that this is what this country is. This is not Europe. This is not anywhere in Asia. and South America has a history of immigration, too, because it's in the New World. But it's just so ludicrous for people to act like their family members, their ancestors who came over on these boats, because it was usually boats in the 19th century. It would have been boats in the 19th century, that this is not their story, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first the Starbucks starts off with that doing away with Christmas thing with their cups.
And now this. They have to get with the program.
Japers.
Steve Bannon's going to be after them.
Well, I don't drink coffee, but I guess I can start.
You can have a tea. You can have a lovely tea. All right. And it only costs you like $12. That's great.
But now I feel like righteous doing it. It's not a bad habit anymore.
All right. We're out of time. A quick reminder on the lockbox. Alan, make the last minute push.
Please, everybody, we're all in it together. We need to do this. We need to keep it alive. Let's have enough money in the bank so that a third, if they take the money away, a third would be there. That's $133,000 more. We've done so well on the—we can't believe how well we've done. Thank you all. Thanks.
With love and thanks, and my thanks to the panel this morning. What a great group and a really great discussion. Thank you all for being here. Eric, thank you for being here. Very nice. Did you get a good shot of us?
Make us look thin and young, okay?
You're gonna Photoshop these, right? Yeah, okay. Just take out the blemish and, okay. Eric, thank you very much for that. We really appreciate it. We will be back with more show after this.